It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, 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 Thunderstruck here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, where it's hot. It's finally got a little bit of hot, and that's good. Well, today it's not so hot, but this weekend it was. And I've been waiting, global warming. So now we have Dar Jamal on, and Dar has been a welcome guest on this show for years, and his reporting from the Middle East. And this morning I talked to someone from Indonesia, and I just love to talk to him about all this stuff, but he's back. He's bringing it home on the Gulf of Mexico instead of the, you know, Gulf of somewhere else, the Persian Gulf. He's in the Gulf of Mexico, where we've had finally someone that can do some writing, that has the investigative skills to go around and talk to people and some contacts to be able to get some information that been very hard for a lot of us to get. Dar, I got you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good to be with you.
Dar, you know, I was glad to see that you were on the case here, and I'm wondering, you know, why it was so difficult for them to understand that this is such a huge problem that was going to affect so many people, and they were not going to be able to keep this secret. I mean, they're still trying to keep even alternative media out. Certainly, they want to embed reporters like it was, and you're familiar with how that worked out in the Middle East. So tell me how it is you got access. Did you ask anybody's permission? Were you embedded? And what you found out?
Well, you know, it was an interesting experience because our first week over there, and I say me and my partner who's with me as a photographer, photos, all kinds of stories. And at first we started to try to go through some of the official channels. I guess, Ernie, I was naive enough to think that living in America and reporting on stories in America that, you know, we'd be able to do that and not run into the same problems I encountered over in Iraq. But you know, shame on me for being so naive and idealistic, I think, because, you know, the media clamped down on this thing from all official sources, whether it be the U.S. government or BP or even the institutions like Louisiana State University and a lot of the other Gulf public colleges that have been given $500 million now of research money from BP in an effort to basically muzzle the science and the people that are going to talk about the long-term effects of this disaster. And that's what I ran into where, for example, I had an interview set up with the head of the science team at Louisiana State University Science Center in New Orleans, who was basically coordinating the research that LSU was going to do in response to the spill. And the interview was set up, and a few hours before we were going to run up there and interview the guy, I got a short email from him saying, I've been told to cancel the interview, sorry for the inconvenience. And it turns out, you know, that was the tip to me to see, okay, why did this happen? What's going on here? And then I learned that BP, very smartly, has been giving hundreds of millions of dollars to universities like LSU and numerous others along the Gulf Coast in research grants to basically weigh in and have a say on what's going to get studied and how they're going to talk about it in the media.
You know, on this show, I say this a lot. You want to control something, you fund it. You know, you want to control the arts. Well, then you have the endowment for the arts. You want to control education, government education, you know, you fund it. You want to control media, you fund it. You want to control scientific research you funded. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, this is a neon flashing example of what I'm talking about. But there has to be a lot of the information that we're getting and the video that we're seeing and the images that we're getting is coming from individuals that are just going. And they're still finding these kinds of problems, even just to talk to people that just live there. If their image shows up on some YouTube, I guess enough's happening to them and their livelihood and their relatives and their friends and so on that they have been taught and learned and got the message, you don't talk to anybody.
Well, and that's what's happened. It's been really difficult getting people to talk, but at the same time, we have had success because, you know, that first week, some of the hard lessons learned of blooding our nose against the closed doors closed federal government by BP, by public institutions. So I basically put myself back into the mode I used operating in Iraq, and that's just find the locals, get them to take me to the stories. They know the area, they know their backyard better than anybody, and they were able to basically help me do in runs around some of the official barriers set up by the federal government and BP. And so we were able to, for example, go out on a couple of flights and basically just fly over all that nonsense, all the barriers, and go straight out to the source, as well as flying over Grand Isle and Barataria Bay and places like that to take photos of it ourselves. And so it was that way, as well as going straight down into visiting folks in their homes, down in the marsh areas, and going out on boats with folks. We were able to get straight into the story and talk to people who were indirectly affected, and of course that's where we really started to get a taste of how bad this situation is, how toxic the situation is, that basically people living on the coast right there in Louisiana, in southeast Louisiana, in the marsh areas, in all the big fisher areas where so much of the country's fish, shrimp, and oysters come from, that area is so toxic that literally one of the days we were down there, we had spent 7 hours down there in Barataria, about an hour drive south of New Orleans, and it was so toxic that our eyes were burning. After we'd been there 15, 20 minutes, we started to get dizzy, short of breath, headaches, and by the time we'd been there 2 hours, we were astounded at how bad we felt. I mean, it was happening that fast to us. While we were there, for example, we ran into Gene Hickman, a charter fisherman, who showed us a video he had taken 2 days before, because everyone down there was showing us the oil sheen in the canals where they lived, had their boats tied up beside their houses. So much oil and dispersants were coming in underwater that the water was so toxic that he showed me a video of crabs literally crawling out of the water of his canal onto the bulkhead trying to escape the water. Of course, they died because crabs need water. They can't stay out of the water for that long. And, of course, we went down there the next day, and he showed us all the dead crabs floating in the water. And that's how toxic it is down there.
Now, the dispersants, it's just like putting palm olive detergent in your dish water. I mean, you know, they just wanted to kind of, you know, break. I mean, it didn't eliminate it. It doesn't take it away. It just dissolves it or disperses it or puts it under the water or whatever. So all of this stuff, in addition to the chemicals that they added, I was kind of thinking, you know, if they wanted to really get rid of the actual oil itself, it'd probably been easier just to leave it alone and let it come up to the top. What was the rationale behind using this dispersant?
Well, you're exactly right, Ernie. Everyone, even within the industry, agrees that the easiest way to get rid, the most efficient way to get rid of the oil is let it all just come straight up to the top. And then you can skim it or do controlled burns or literally cover it with hay and then collect it, because the hay will absorb it, and then collect it all and then take it elsewhere to be disposed of properly. That is the easiest way to go out there, get it as soon as it hits the surface. That's the easiest way. The whole purpose with the dispersant, all dispersant does, it doesn't make the oil go away. It basically just breaks it up into tiny little bits, and so to keep it from either reaching the surface as they've been hitting it down at the source where it was coming out of the busted well at the bottom of the Gulf, as well as then dropping it, spraying it from planes, oil already on the surface of the water to break it up so that it would sink. And this dispersant, let's be real clear, there's two types of corrective dispersants being used. They're both banned in the United Kingdom. BP can't even use them at home, but thanks to our so-called Environmental Protection Agency, they were basically let alone to use it here. The EPA asked them not to use it, and they said, no, we're going to use it anyway, and the EPA basically just said, okay. And so they've been using this stuff. It is an industrial solvent. It's very, very harmful to humans and wildlife, and when mixed with the oil, it actually creates a toxic soup that's four times more toxic than the oil itself, which is already technically a hazardous material. Let's be clear about that as well. So using all of this, the sole reason they used it, and many experts are agreeing on this, was to basically hide the massive amounts of oil that had gushed out of this well to keep it from reaching up to the surface, if it did reach the surface, they would hit it with dispersant again and sink it, and they did a pretty good job of keeping the brunt of this oil underwater. Now, this has set the stage for mass long-term problems where now this oil is going to be all swirling around the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, when we come back, we're going to find out and talk more about the long-term problems with Dar Jamil. He's on the scene. He's going to share with us. You guys stay right there. We'll learn something.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
It's me, Ernest Hancock, and Dar Jamil, which has been a correspondent that we've known for years that put himself in harm's way. You know, I remember you're originally from Alaska, aren't you?
Actually, originally from Houston, but I think when I first started talking with you, Ernie, I was living up in Alaska, so I lived up there for 9 years.
So we have in Alaska, they've gone through this with the Valdez, and I don't know, have the fisheries and the beaches and such that were exposed to all this oil, have they recovered?
Yes and no. The Exxon Valdez back in 1989 did a good job of wiping out a lot of the shrimp for several years and the herring. Some of the shrimp populations and some of the salmon populations that were wiped out have come back, but actually to date the herring up there still have yet to recover. And of all the oil that spilled in that spill, which the lower estimates are 250,000 barrels, only 14% of it was actually recovered, and still to this day you can go up to a lot of those beaches and turn over rocks and find a lot of fresh oil.
You know, the one thing immediately when this first happened, I mean immediately, it came to mind, there was a bioremediation, I think they called it. So it was microbes, it was bacteria that they took from all over the world that ate oil. And I remember them using it in Texas. There was some spill back in late 80s, early 90s or something, and they put it out there, and they were amazed at how, you know, Mama Nature says, you know what, some oil, they ate it up, it's all done. Well, then they did this dispersant thing, and now it's not where they can the bacteria could even get to it. But it was called spillfighters.com or something. They sent out an email that I got hold of, and we're still trying to get hold of them. They're really busy, of course, and so on. We'll get them on the show here, I think, within the next couple of weeks. But I remember that it was enormously effective, that the state of Texas had a requirement that had the stuff on hand. The state of Texas, their environmental quality division, whatever they called it, they were big supporters of this. It was a big, huge deal, and BP refused to use it. And I have no idea what's going on behind that story. Do you know anything about that?
I do. It's a very simple answer, Ernie. It's going to make you a bit sick, but probably not too surprised. BP has been loath to let any other outside company come in with any other different ideas of remediation of any kind, bio or otherwise, because it's a very simple equation. There are BP executives sitting on the board of Nalco, the company that makes the Corexit dispersants.
Oh, yeah. You know, I, you know, there should be liability just for stupid stuff like that. I mean, you know, because I remember this stuff. I mean, I remember that the big deal about it, and even the oil industry, mostly it was even the states, that they were so excited about having a product, these microbes that actually ate oil. And a lot of times, you know, they were using it in different ways to, you know, it's kind of like refining it to get certain other byproducts and different, you know, all kinds of different stuff. But, you know, this was a natural way, or at least, you know, sure as heck more than putting all this, you know, palm olive oil or dish detergent on it or whatever. And it had an enormous impact on the future. And part of the reasoning why they even allowed them to increase drilling in the Gulf. I mean, all this offshore drilling, they had to have an A and a B and a C and a D plan of some kind. What if? And this was part of it out of Texas. And now it's 20 plus years later or whatever it was, and they act like they never even heard of it.
Well, they've heard of it, and they've heard of numerous other ways to get rid of oil and deal and respond appropriately to the spills and better ways to collect it, better ways to dispose of it. But the thing is, BP, and this is, you know, the Obama administration is complicit, the Bush administration before that is complicit, as the Clinton administration. We can go on down, just walk back through time and see just the massive amount of really complicity between federal governments and big offshore drilling companies, BP, Exxon, go on down the big six list, and they've basically been given a pass, and particularly with this, with the deep water drilling 5,000 feet plus, that they literally did not have a response plan, and that is why it took them almost 3 months to just get a cap on this thing, and they still don't have the well plugged yet from down below. This is far from over. And all this and the amount of oil that leaked out and this shabby response effort and all the myriad problems we've seen is directly because they did not have a response plan they could put into place immediately when this accident happened, because they were not held responsible by the federal government.
Well, it seems to me the way this has been, I don't know, dealt with in the media, how they've used the Coast Guard, how they use the Navy, how they've used local law enforcement, how they've used, you know, every aspect of any segment of our society. It seems like, you know, big business, the corporations, the oil, they are the government.
Well, they are, Ernie, and I think that's really one of the creepiest things of this whole situation, is it really shows as clearly as anything we've seen in a long time how really, BP, big corporations are essentially running the government. I mean, and this is evident here with this oil disaster from the very beginning, when BP says, oh, there's no leak, so the Coast Guard says there's no leak. BP then says, okay, there's 1,000 barrels a day leak, so the Coast Guard says the same, on up to 5,000 to 15,000, and finally we're at this, you know, the final estimate was between 30 and 60,000 barrels. But the bottom line is BP has been calling the shots from the beginning, and they still are right now. When you look at the well, the situation is not plugged. We're far from over, and yet the Coast Guard's painting this rosy picture like all they have to do is get these relief rigs down there and finish plugging this thing off, when in reality we have five other now gas seeps coming out around the wellhead area, which actually could spell a much more dangerous situation in the future, yet the government is not holding BP account because BP is calling the shots.
Wow. You know, they share Goldman Sachs officers, do they?
They do. That's correct.
I mean, you know, especially when you got Goldman Sachs, selling off right before it happens. I mean, you're kind of what? You know, I mean, there's so many weird things going on here. You know, I'm looking this up. It's spillfighters.com. I remember it was Spillfighter something. And it says here, microbes occur in nature. In fact, humans have over a pound of microbes in their bodies, and each type of microbe is programmed to do certain tasks. Some decompose plant matter, others help break down toxins. In the last 20 years, scientists have been able to find and harvest these naturally occurring oil-eating microbes from around the world and increase their reproduction production cycle so that trillions are now available to help us. And then this is what they have done is they create this powder, or it's a liquid or whatever. I think originally what I saw was in powder form, that they just spread these microbes on the oil, and they go, yeah, baby, that's what I'm talking about, and they go to town. And then at the bottom of this, it just says, if you are a local, state, or federal government official, press or media representative, or an oil company executive, please contact us, and we'll provide any information you need to make an informed decision about how to implement this process. And I'm saying they are informed. They don't care. There's another agenda. There's something else going on. And we're going into break here, but I want to leave you with this. And when we come back, and we can talk about this, Dar, I am of the opinion that this global warming thing wasn't working out. It for a lot of reasons. So what they do is we still want to have a cap and trade. We want to have a global tax. We have a global government. We want to have something, a big environmental kind of whatever. And it's like Rahm Emanuel says, man, you don't let a good disaster go to waste. Okay? So here we have the Gulf of Mexico becoming a toilet. And I can hear the screaming already. We need a global solution. Well, here's some Mother Nature solution, and they don't care. Something else is going on. Right back with Dar Jamail in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Nations dropping bombs, chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering as the youth are young. So ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I could ask myself, really what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of them dividends. Not respecting each other, denying thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Come on.
If you never know truth, you never know love. We need the truth. And you're not going to trust. You're not going to love without the truth. You know, I'm really just in a bad mood today, Dar. There's so many things going on, and it's just a bunch of stuff. And I'll tell you what it is. Let me share this with you, okay, Dar?
Okay.
There was a gentleman I had on a week or so ago. He's from Massachusetts University. It was talking about we need more regulation, and we need this Wall Street legislation passed, and Wall Street's getting too much. We need to control them more and all this kind of stuff. And you know that, you know, I'm a libertarian. I know you're more progressive, and it's just, you know, the role of government thing. And the one point that I was making to him was I said, you know, you keep advocating, though, that you're going to take my money and put it into buckets of money. You know, you have social and economic engineering that's going to be IRAs and 401ks and pension funds and whatever. You create these enormous buckets of money with Social Security and health insurance now and all this other stuff. I guarantee you there is some corporate Wall Street pension fund manager rating company, De La, it's ours now. Thanks for all the fish. You know, keep putting all your chips on the table. Everybody all in. Okay, it's ours now. Oh, you want, got some more? We'll put them on again. We'll take that too. Got some gold? We'll take that too. And I'm going, I don't care how much regulation, how much licensing, how much oversight, how much you got. There will be the big bad boys will say, thank you very much. We're going to use the regulatory agencies for our benefit. They will prevent competition. They will slow down others that will, you know, even be able to compete directly with them or to clean up their mess. So we have another perfect example of this, of BP has got into the halls of government and controlled the very mechanism that was supposed to protect us from them. And it prevents us from protecting ourselves. And they take these institutions, all these control mechanisms that fund universities and fund media and fund, and they're licensed to media. I mean, the only thing that gives us any kind of hope is this alternative media and guys just like you going out there and doing this. So I'm hammering on him, you know, you're just a part of the problem by allowing for the creation of the bucket. So he sends me what he believes to be a libertarian in Indonesia that works with an enormous population. It's 240, 50 million people in Indonesia and a landmass of Arizona, okay? And you have this concentration of all these 17,000 islands, and they have all of these wealth and resources, and they're going to start doing oil there. They're going to start doing offshore drilling, they're going to be doing all kinds of, and they want to exploit that. So what do they do? They say, hey, we need more freedom, man. We need freedom for court. We need all this freedom. And I'm going, yep, economic and social freedoms, that's cool. But they death penalty for drugs, 20 years if you caught smoking a marijuana cigarette. Heck no, you can't have a gun. So there isn't really individual freedoms. It's all about livestock management of the people as a resource for the companies, for the state, for this collective thing, and they never really address the end of it, because that's the promise that government always makes. They promise we're going to take care of you as an individual, you. It's going to be better for you, and it never, ever is. And they go, well, you're just an anarchist or you're an anti-federalist. So I'm going, compared to what? What we got now? Heck yeah. And you're seeing, Daria, and a perfect example of this, government did not save us. It enabled it. It enables the problems that are going on now. It facilitates more abuse, more cover-up, more damage. And I'm going crazy trying to convince people that this thinking somebody else is going to do it for you is the problem. In my opinion, your thoughts.
I agree. That's my short answer. In this case, the situation in the Gulf is a shining example. You know, we have the MMS, the federal MMS agency that was supposed to be the regulatory agency and make sure that all this stuff that we're looking at right now and dealing with would never happen. And, you know, instead they're bought off by BP. They're, bringing BP executives to sex shows. I mean, they're literally in bed with BP. I don't know how much more in bed than that you can get. Corruption. Up and down, inside out, the entire agency, the MMS, which has since been abolished and renamed, is now probably doing similar things, but a little bit more carefully. We're at that point with the government where, as is written into the Constitution, where if it comes to a point where the government is not effectively representing the will of the people, it needs to be abolished.
That's Declaration of Independence, man. Point. That's Declaration of Independence. That's why this show is Declare Your Independence. You know, see, the Declaration has nothing to do with the Constitution. Constitution, in between the two, is the Articles of Confederation. The Constitution was a liberty grab. I mean, it was Art Hamilton wanting to create a national bank. It was just more consolidation under one ruler, kind of give me the ring crap. You know, the Declaration didn't even mention what kind of government. It goes, we don't care. But any governments, you know, created by man is, you know, for only one justifiable reason we can come up with, the defense of individual rights. And that's not what's happening. And I'm telling you, you've known me a long time, Dar, and I'm in the same mantra. Across the political spectrum, no matter where you come at this from, if you believe in just a simple concept of I own myself, of self-ownership, that I am not just a freaking cog in the machine, then you will ultimately come to the conclusion that government is hurting you. It is a detriment. And every promise that they make is always about taking something for you. And I just call it delayed spending. It's like my kids. They go, ooh, I've saved $100. I go, no, you haven't. You already got a plan for it, don't you? Oh, yeah, I'm going to buy this bike and this radio and this thing and this whatever, you know, when they're kids. And I'm going, that's not called savings. That's called delayed spending. And that's all they're doing. There's no investment. There's no savings. It's just delayed spending. Heck, they don't even delay anymore. They just put the debt on my grandkids. So I'm just going, you know, there has to be, and the reason I'm harping on you, Dar, is that I know you travel in more progressive, circles, and I'm just, is it lost on you what's happening here? Do you really think more government's going to fix this kind of stuff?
No, I don't. That's why I just said it needs to be abolished. This government, we're so far past reform or having a government that represents people in this country. I mean, we're living in a corporatocracy. I don't know how much more clear it needs to be. I mean, it just came out today. BP is now openly admitting that they're going to be writing off their taxes, meaning money that should have been spent by their work in the Gulf that would have come back in the form of taxes to the American people that they would be paying the federal government to do their work out there. They're now writing off the entire cleanup effort, at least $10 billion worth of it, which means the U.S., by default, U.S. taxpayers are paying for BP's oil disaster. That's where we're at. And, it, you know, if that doesn't get your blood boiling, I don't know what will. But, no, Ernie, I am no... You know, I don't think it could be any more clear at this point to all of us that, you know, wherever we are on the political spectrum, this government is a farce. It's nothing but a faceplate for corporations, and it needs to be done away with.
Well, you know, and then replaced with, I vote nothing. I just, can I have nothing? I vote none. You know, can I have none of the above? It's always like, you know, I get to vote what kind of farm I want, but I never get to vote to be off the farm. You know, can I not be a slave? You know, it's like, no, we need this kind of plantation. And I'm going, seriously, can I not be a slave? I don't want to be on a plantation. So, and that's what America was supposed to be. And you saw it firsthand. We would talk to you while you're in Baghdad. You're embedded. Well, no, you avoided the embedding. You went outside the wall. You lived outside the green zone. You were out amongst the people. You grew the beard and got it on and got a translator. And I'm telling you, you know, what you saw there, the rubber meeting the road right there with people in other countries, were you reminded, did you see the same kind of thing of the people that live on the Gulf and the devastation that was happening to their way of life?
I have. I mean, it's the people, the honest folks living down there in the Gulf, working as fishermen, as oyster fishermen, shrimpers, just doing their thing that they've been doing for generations. Their dad did it, their grandpa did it, and now their entire livelihood, their entire culture, where they live, everything is just decimated. And now what are they going to do? I mean, literally, that's really one of the hardest parts of this whole thing to get our heads around is, you know, there are all these people, and what are they going to do? Their entire livelihood has just been yanked out from under them by the government. What
they're going to go to the beach, and they're going to sop up oil and get sick and die. Same thing happened with Valdez. Same thing's going on down there. When we come back, Dar Jamail is going to tell us exactly the health problems associated with this.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my good friend Dar Jamail, that has been an independent investigative journalist around the globe, and most recently, I mean, I've got to know him from his reporting from Baghdad and around, and now he's on the Gulf, and we need you back here. Thank you for doing this. And I'm looking at an article by Stephen Lemon on Freedom's Phoenix. He's writing about the growing health crisis. And he has a quote here. It says, the combination of millions of gallons of oil and dispersants has made large areas of the Gulf toxic and dangerous. Marine toxicologist Ricky Ott says if she lived there with children, she'd leave. So I'm based on her firsthand experience after 1989 in Prince William Sound in Alaska with the Valdez. What are the health things that you came up? I mean, you actually went out on the water. You were there in the marshes, weren't you?
That's right. And, you know, the initial exposure symptoms to the dispersants, whether they're with oil or not, are shortness of breath, headaches, dizziness, respiratory problems, breathing problems, skin rashes. And I experienced all of those just from being around that crap for a few hours.
So you're talking about the dispersant, not even the oil.
Right, just on its own. And then as you stay around it longer, these things are extremely toxic. As I said before, this is an industrial solvent, a lot of nasty chemicals in it. And as you stay around it, it's mutagenic, it's carcinogenic, it's a neurotoxin. It causes really all sorts of a host of problems then, of course, that will eventually kill you, makes you very prone to leukemia and other types of cancers, really, really nasty stuff. And so it's not being alarmist to say that these heavily affected areas, particularly right now in southeast Louisiana, are toxic zones, and people really need to be leaving. And a lot of people down there already are sending their kids, like, for example, if they have grandparents or friends that live further north, they are sending their kids out.
Oh, let's go ahead and take a couple of calls. And I think people may have something to say on this. 866-986-6397. Go ahead, Stephen. You still there? Nah, we lost you. I'm going to go ahead. How long can you stay today, Dar? Do you got to leave after the top of the hour?
I do, unfortunately.
You know, I really would like to spend more time on this and get the audience involved, because I lived in Tampa. Well, I lived in Dade City, which is about 35 miles northeast of Tampa, where you are right now, until I was 12. My whole side of my father's family is from Florida. I know how extensive sea life is to the Gulf. I know that the economy is so intertwined with the ocean that it's just, plus the lifestyle is too. And this is a giant cesspool. I mean, the Gulf of Mexico will never be the same, and it's going to be a long time before it even looks anywhere close to being the same. And if they didn't have these dispersants and so on, what would be the toxicity of the oil itself?
Well, just the oil itself, like we talked about at the beginning, it'd be, first of all, it'd be far easier to clean up on its own. It would eventually all wash up on shore as tar balls, which are very easy to collect and far less dangerous chemically. I mean, certainly you don't want to be running around playing in oil. It still is a hazardous material, but notably less. I mean, at a minimum, four times less toxic than the dispersants themselves. So, and that's why I've seen even some reports from oil industry scientists saying, you know, compared to the way BP has handled this whole thing, they would have been far better off doing absolutely nothing.
The reasoning for doing it was what? Cosmetic?
Cosmetic and financial. Cosmetic because, well, and these walk hand in hand because, according to government regulations, if BP, you know, anytime there's an oil spill by anybody, they're going to be charged per barrel, as well as per dead dolphin, per dead turtle, per dead anything that they find. That's how they're going to be financially punished for this. And so BP said, okay, well, we're going to keep as much of it as possible from getting the surface so that the spill looks far, far smaller, so we'll be less liable. And the same goes with wildlife. So any wildlife, you know, there's a lot of reports of folks collecting wildlife for them and hiding them, burning them, even exploding them. All kinds of crazy reports, and especially with the oil, they're doing absolutely whatever is necessary to make it appear as though this spill is as small as possible, because that means less money they're going to have to pay out at the end.
Oh, you know, this is, you look at what you reward and what you punish, and you can see what's going to happen. You know, if
right.
You're punishing this kind of, you know, they're not punishing fraud. They're not punishing long-term effect of, and it's all this superficial feel-good government crap. And I don't know, just today I took a three-day weekend just to, you know, relax and get a lot of things done. I felt so much better coming in today, and it's just been one thing after another. Just what builds up over the last few days of this kind of stuff, Dar, and I'm telling you, I don't have any hope for. I have a lot of hope for us as individuals, as human beings, as, you know, our species. I think if we weren't inherently good people, we'd be extinct by now. But I really want to get this monkey off my back. I don't see any net benefit of government at all. I can't justify it. I can't rationalize it. I can't see it. It causes more harm than good in almost every situation I can think of. I mean, everything that I can think of. And you being around the world and going through this, the only bright lights, even in our conversations before, has always been individuals. You know, that made decisions on their own. There has to be some ray of light of individuals just taking on something that made you feel inspired and good about the people in the Gulf. Was there some ray of hope there?
Well, that's true, Ernie, and I completely agree. These are extremely dark times, and I think they will continue to get darker because, you know, the government is nothing more than an enabler for corporations at this point. So I think things are guaranteed to get worse before they get any better until we have radical change. But I think, you know, what did
what did inspire me along the Gulf is just seeing these individuals in the human spirit and people that are determined to fight, and they are determined to have their areas cleaned up and try to carry forward however they can, and they are determined to keep government and BP out of their lives as much as possible. They are banding together. They're finding their own ways to deal with this through their own remediation of the oil and dispersants coming into their area, and finding their own way to try to get real compensation for the damages done to them. And, of course, this is only going to happen on an individual and community level, not higher than that, not even involving state governments, but just on an individual level. I saw many, many people, met many people in Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida that really, you know, on a local level, just working on their own or with small other groups of people, are doing a heck of a job fighting this and taking care of themselves and trying to protect themselves.
You know, and you say radical change, you know, you need radical change. I thought that's what Obama was all about.
Oh, come on. I mean, where's my bucket so I can get sick? I mean, I'm sorry for anyone that actually believes that propaganda. I mean, you know, real fundamental radical change, like, first of all, getting rid of the government in its entirety. And on that, I certainly would agree with you and know plenty of people that do. I mean, we have a completely fundamentally corrupt system down to the marrow of its bones, and you can't use a corrupt system to reform itself. It defies logic. So we have to just completely abolish that system, put it in its grave, and seal it with cement. And then we have to start from there. And where we go from there, sure, there'd be some debates and whatnot and different viewpoints politically, but I think everyone at this point, or at least so many people across the political spectrum, agree that, you know, the government and how it's run by corporations, I mean, it is so fundamentally corrupt that it basically needs to be, put down forever. I mean, this system is only getting worse with every passing day.
Is there any government on the planet that you would go, wow, if we could be like them? I mean, is there one?
You know, my take on governments, frankly, is there is a great journalist, American journalist named Martha Gellhorn, that covered World War One and World War Two, and she has a quote that goes something like, all governments are bad and some are worse.
Yeah. I vote none. And I, you know, and if we can... You know, people are harmed and they have their own tradition to take it. You have to do it yourself, because if you don't, you know, there's they just get in control of the guys that they promised was going to take care of you, and then they're their guys. You know, so we see this over and over and over. You know, we'll come up with a solution. I mean, because humanity marches on, and it really comes down to individuals like you, Dar, that will take the time and the expertise to go out and get us this information. And as you get more, would you please make yourself available to us to let us know what's going on? Because we can't get information anywhere else.
Well, you bet, Ernie, and I definitely plan on staying on this story for a long time, because it's a huge story and it's not going away.
No, it's not. And I know when you say you're on a story, there's a guy that's in Baghdad for years, okay? So he's on the story. And it saves me from having to go myself. I mean, we've been talking, I'm like, do I got to go down? Don't make me go down there, because, Ernie be a butthead, you know? Well, now, you know, I got a lot of things to do. We may make a trip. I got family and stuff. We may go ahead and have to make a trip anyway. But in the meantime, we got Dar Jamail. Dar, you got a website you want to send people to?
Yeah, it's dar.org, dahr.org.
dahr.org, dar.org, dahr. Dar Jamail, thanks for coming on, man. We'll have you back soon. And you guys stay right there so we can declare our independence some more here with me, Ernest Hancock. But you know what? You don't need to do it with me. You can do it on your own. And you don't even need a government form. We'll be right back.